This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. In the March Madness brackets, who's got the Elite Eight? Really? You certainly didn't make up the perfect bracket. We know that. Otherwise, you'd still be in the running for the $1 billion that Warren Buffett backed up. But the rest of the March Madness story this week had to do with the legal side of it. Last weekend on the show, I talked with Jeffrey Kessler, a high-profile sports attorney who is suing the NCAA on behalf of some of the college basketball players and college football players, for that matter, who want to be able to be free agents, essentially. He did this in the NFL, getting free agency for the players in a lawsuit years ago. Now he's trying to do it in college basketball. And at the same time, we had a decision by the NLRB in Chicago this week that the players at Northwestern University, led by their quarterback, Kane Coulter, can organize a union there. Essentially, their argument was, we're not just students. We're not student athletes. We are paid employees of our university. After all, the arbitrator in the NLRB said, regular students don't get recruited regardless of their grades. Football players do. It's rare that a regular student would get $76,000 worth of scholarship each year. That's what the top players get. And they bring in huge money for their schools. Northwestern's football team has brought in $235 million for that school since 2003. Johnny Manziel of Texas A&M, who got about $120,000 worth of scholarships during the 3 years he's been there, and now going pro, he supposedly helped that school increase their donations from $300 million to $740 million. $440 million more came into the school, and how much of it did he get? None. Here to talk about the whole question of whether college basketball and football players should be paid is Ellis Hennekin, a columnist for Newsday, who's been writing about this recently. Ellis, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Paul, good to be with you.
What's the argument for not paying these players?
You know, it's beginning to fade, honestly. Tradition, I guess that's a good argument. You could also claim that, well, you know, some of the minor sports will be disadvantaged. Nobody's talking about paying lacrosse players or field hockey players. And, you know, there would clearly be some issues. If we begin to pay the big-time college football and basketball players, there would clearly be some issues we would have to work out. But I got to tell you, I think the current system is unsustainable.
So the whole concept of amateurism goes right out the window?
You know, it's flying that way, isn't it? If you're talking about games that have impacts of hundreds, and those were your figures, and I think you're right, hundreds of millions of dollars of impact, not only on the university, but on the sneaker companies and the television networks and everybody else making money here, except for the kids whose talent and hard work and dedication makes it all possible, most of whom have no chance of a professional career, who risk injury every time they go out onto the court or the field. You know what? I think they Kessler and the others have a fairly strong argument that you got to do something for them. Now, what it is, we can debate, but you got to do something.
Well, you know what the colleges will say. We are doing something. We are giving them an education.
Boy, talking about cheapskates, huh? I mean, yes, most of us would love college scholarships for our children, but the balance between a $50,000 scholarship and $400 million extra in the endowment, let me tell you, it's the best bargain any university has ever got.
You know, Northwestern, as part of their argument at the NLRB, was, hey, you know what? We do a pretty good job with these students. 97% of our college athletes graduate from Northwestern. That's the highest rate among college athletes anywhere in the country. These kids, after all, graduate with an average of a 3.0 GPA. That's not the entire student body. That's just the college athletes. So if Northwestern is saying that, can't you turn around and say, okay, well, that's pretty good, but...
Right, you know, good for Northwestern, and I mean, I wish a lot of other schools had numbers that were similar. So let's give them due praise. Watch the way this debate unfolds. What the NCAA and the universities are pushing behind the scenes now, but increasingly in public, is the notion that, yeah, we'll do a little more for these guys. We'll give them health insurance. We'll give them guaranteed right to return. If they get injured, they would get to keep their scholarships. That kind of what I would call minor tinkering. That's where they would like the debate to go. The players' representatives say, hey, you've barely begun to compensate us. You know, let's treat this like we do any relationship. Let us negotiate. Let us come together and negotiate as a group. Give us an equal footing to make sure that we get not just a little share, but our fair share. That's where this debate is headed.
You know, among the other things that Peter Sung Orr, the regional director of the NLRB in Chicago, said in his decision this week was, you know, regular students don't give the university control over their lives as a condition of admission or aid. Football players do as a condition of keeping their scholarships. Regular students aren't told when to eat, where to live, when and how long to sleep. Northwestern players are. They can't rent an apartment. They can't buy a car or even tweet without the permission of the coach. And to Ellis, to me, it doesn't even go into the fact that in addition to, quote, going to college, unquote, they are also working a 40, 50, or 60-hour week for that school's team.
That's right, and prohibited from getting another job, which was another one of the arguments that the labor board made. Well, listen, we can no longer maintain the fiction that these are just normal kids going to college and, oh, gee, playing a little sports on the side. That is not the reality of big-time college athletics in America today. So somehow or another, and again, the details are not simple, but somehow or another, Paul, we've got to come up with a system that recognizes the reality of how much of a commitment these kids make, the reality of how many dollars they bring in, the reality that the vast majority of them, this is it. There is no future for most of them. It's not like we put in the time here and we'll make it back in the NBA or the NFL. You know, baseball has a very different system. I'm not saying that's a good one, but, you know, baseball players traditionally don't even go to college. Maybe the NBA needs to set up a minor league. Each of those issues, each of those scenarios has its own challenges. But we can no longer claim, hey, these are just a bunch of kids playing a cute little game for their own betterment and our enjoyment. That is not what this is about anymore.
I want to go back to one of the first things you said here, which had to do with other sports at these schools, because it's basketball and football that bring in these huge dollars. They're not making any money off of the girls' softball team or the boys' lacrosse team or the golf and track and field teams. What happens to those sports if we do essentially turn basketball and football at colleges into a minor league pro team?
You know what? I'm not worried about it. Let them play at whatever level of support they can. You know, I mean, nobody shows up for college baseball games, and that's a pretty good sport today and getting better every year. But, you know, it's okay if they don't have sneaker contracts. These are all wonderful games. They teach sportsmanship and keep you in good shape. And, you know, being regular amateurs is a perfectly noble thing. And if it's a good cause to support these things, let the universities, let the donors support them. I don't understand why a talented quarterback needs to be the one who is subsidizing the lacrosse team or the girls' field hockey. You know, it's a lovely thing, but why should these few students with their talent, ability, and money-raising skills, why should they be the ones to pay for it?
Do you think that the players, I mean, we talked about some of the benefits that they deserve. Do you think that they actually should be getting a check as a full-time employee of that university?
You know, honest to God, I understand that. That's so different from the traditions, but I don't know that offends me anymore. The more I've thought about it, the more I'm convinced that let's handle it with what it really is. Let's give these people the power to negotiate. Let's let them get whatever the market will bear. Let the schools pay whatever they want to pay, and the players will go wherever they get the best deal. You know, that works in all the other parts of society. Why should this business be treated differently from all other businesses? And don't you tell me it's not a business. I know it's a business.
Yeah, it is a business, but if you do that, aren't you essentially telling these guys, you know what, forget about the athlete part. Forget about the student part. You're not going to be a student anymore. You're going to be a hired athlete. You don't even have to go to class.
you know what? How different is it for most of them? You know, I mean, really, you know, there's a trade that goes on, and we don't talk about it, but the trade is you come here and you play well, and we'll take care of the other stuff. We'll give you a nice dorm, and we'll there'll be lots of girls who like to go out with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll have a pretty sweet life for a few years as long as you're serving us well. But don't you get hurt.
Yep.
Don't you sell a jersey.
No, you're absolutely right. Ellis Hennekin, co-author of Dwight Gooden's memoir and Charlie Crist's most recent book, his memoir called The Party's Over. Ellis Hennekin, also columnist for Newsday. Thanks for joining me again, Ellis.
Hey, thanks for the spirit of talk.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.